The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Is America beyond repair, a house in the process of collapsing? Inside AOC's brain. And what's up with these socialist rich kids? This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. I'm really happy to have Mike Lindell and MyPillow as a main sponsor of this podcast. Mike tells me I've actually become the number one MyPillow salesman in the country. And so I kind of joke that I've reached the pinnacle of my career. But I'm really happy for this, and I want to thank you for supporting Mike, because Mike makes great stuff, and Mike stands up for his beliefs even when he's under the gun. MyPillow is not about a lot more than pillows. It's about towels and blankets and weighted blankets and robes and dog beds. We just got a dog bed. Pillows, body pillows. Debbie uses a body pillow regularly. Pajamas, flannel sheets, throws, all kinds of stuff. He's offering buy one, get one free on the sheet sets. Now, Mike's come out with the world's most comfortable bed sheets. He found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. His new Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton, and Mike guarantees they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. The first night you sleep on the sheets, you'll never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream sheets are available in a variety of colors, and like all Mike's products, they have a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. So right now, you can buy one, get one free. Buy one, get one free. Call 800-876-0227. Use promo code Dinesh. For a limited time, buy one, get one free. Call 800-876-0227 or just go to MyPillow.com. But don't forget to use promo code Dinesh.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Is the United States beyond repair, a house in the process of collapsing? This is a real fear now with the new government, the new structure of power. And let's just think back. Before the election, conservatives said publicly that this election was the most important election. And that was not really boilerplate rhetoric. We may have heard it before, but we meant it this time. And we can't now take it back. We can't say, oh, by the way, we were exaggerating. You know, we were kidding. The United States is going to be just fine. Land of opportunity. No. The left may see itself as progressive. They're moving toward a glorious future. But I think we recognize that there are warning signals. To put it differently, the termites are now inside the building. And this causes in me a greater alarm than I've had politically in all the years I've been in the United States. Because for an immigrant, it would be crushing to see the United States go down, to see the house collapse. I think back, in fact, to my years growing up in India, and I grew up under socialism, in fact, democratic socialism. When I hear the rhetoric of socialism, it's very familiar to me, and I want to talk about what that experience actually felt like. The first ingredient of it was the pervasiveness of corruption everywhere. I remember once as a kid, I was on a train, and I went past my station, and I was with a friend of mine. And when I got off the train, there was a ticket man standing there. And he goes, I'm gonna write you a ticket for a fine. show me your identification. And so I did, and I got the big ticket for a fine. And as we were walking away, my friend goes, Dinesh, you're such an idiot. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you're supposed to slip a 20 rupee note into the plastic sleeve with your identification. That's what he was looking for. He doesn't want to write you a ticket. He wants money for himself. And that's just a small example of the pervasiveness of corruption. It also occurs in a big way. Several years ago in India, a Bollywood star driving really fast after a kind of a wild night on the town drives on the pavement and kills a bunch of people. But when he comes up at trial, he produces all these fake witnesses who say they were there and he didn't do it. In fact, somebody else was driving the car, even though he was clearly in the car with the actual victims identify him. But nevertheless, there's a big court case. It goes on for years. And in effect, the guy is able to get away with it. So there are two classes of people, the elite who are connected and powerful and they get away with everything. And then the ordinary guy who gets away with nothing and is in fact often targeted or screwed over. I once talked to my father about what would happen if one was publicly critical of the government. And he goes, well, you can't do it. This is India. He said, you know, if you do it, somebody will come to your house or your school and break your legs. And you just have to think of that as the way we live around here. That is life in India. I thought about my own life as I grew up, and I realized that there was no opportunity. The only life available to me was to live the same life that my father lived. And my father lived a life which was middle class. We did have a car. But interestingly, our car was so old that when you looked at the floor, you could actually see the road. There were holes in the car. And I thought to myself, this is a country where my destiny is just given to me. When I came to America, I saw something amazing, which was, first of all, the country was clean. And I don't just mean clean in the sense of sanitary. I mean, the corruption, while I knew it existed, did not infest every aspect of American life. And second, I saw ladders of opportunity, not just a chance to make a better life for myself, but the chance to be the architect of my own life, to have a destiny not given to me so much as constructed by me. I think this is really why the idea of America is so appealing, particularly to young people worldwide. But this is all now in jeopardy because we have a group of people in charge and they don't really believe in the American dream. And they want to take America in a different direction, which for us means they want to take it down. The very elements of American exceptionalism that I cherished, they abhor, they despise. And so when people ask me things like, do you want Biden to succeed? My obvious answer is no. I mean, in a generic sense, I want America to succeed. But I don't think it's going to succeed with Biden. I don't think it's going to succeed if the left has its way. Ultimately, these are people, you may almost say, who are steering the Titanic toward the iceberg. A very alarming thought. And quite frankly, if America goes down, and Debbie and I discuss this occasionally, where do we go? Is there a place to go? Now, I actually was chuckling, ruefully chuckling, a few days ago. I saw an article in the New York Post. Humans could move to floating asteroid belt colony within 15 years. Apparently, there's an asteroid belt out there. It's not the moon. It's not Mars. It's only 325 million miles away from the Earth. But according to a Finnish meteorologist and astrophysicist, Pekka Janhunen, the Finnish Meteorological Institute in Helsinki, he thinks we can do it, and we can do it in 15 years. Now, I do caution you that the guy is from Finland. I think drugs are legal in Finland, aren't they, Debbie?
I think so.
You think
yep.
so, too?
Yep.
I don't know. So it could be that this guy has been, you know, hitting the marijuana. I'm not saying he is. But, I mentioned this, as I say, a little ruefully, because there is no place to go. I'm not going anywhere. Quite honestly, if the ship goes down, I guess I'm going to go down with it. I've already done my immigrant relocation. I'm not relocating. But America has been the hope of the world. No civilization is permanent. And in fact, civilizations that go down typically never come back. It's not they don't survive. They just don't flourish anymore. Look at the ancient Greeks. They were great in the 5th century BC. They're gone. They're not coming back. Look at the Romans. Look at the Ottomans. Turkey was at one point, you could almost call it the capital of the world. Really, not today. The British Empire, once the sun set on the British Empire, it was never going to rise again, at least not over there. So we got to remember that we have, as America, one shot at this. And for the first time in my adult lifetime, I think that it's America itself that hangs in the balance. So our job, and it's a daunting one, is to be the voice of reason, the prophetic voice of criticism, the political voice of resistance and block and tackle. And I want this show to be an intelligent, bold, witty way of challenging these entrenched orthodoxies, attacking this progressivism for the bogus system it is. Amik, I have a funny video to show you to close out this monologue. And it's a video that I made actually a couple of years ago that I think sums up the argument I'm trying to make and sums up my view of modern progressivism. It's called The Ant and the Termite. Here it is. To understand the central divide in American politics, it helps to think about the distinction between the ant and the termite. Now, the ant is very industrious. I've been reading the Harvard scholar E.O. Wilson, an authority on ants, and he points out that the ant can be an individualist. But at the same time, ants like to work together. They will cooperate voluntarily to haul food. Wilson notes that you want to be careful in dealing with the ant. The ant is a leave-me-alone type of guy. Ants don't like you to mess with them. Now, the termite, by contrast, is not so much of a builder. The termite is really a destroyer. I've been reading an authority on termites, Saul Alinsky, in his book Rules for Radicals, and he points out that termites need to be no less industrious than ants in accomplishing termite objectives. Now, it's easy to be dismissive of the termite and consider the termite in a purely negative light, but try to look at the world from the point of view of the termite. If termites could talk, they would call what they do progress. Big tech companies don't hesitate to throw conservatives off their platforms. We can't trust these people one bit. So why exactly are we choosing to give these big tech companies all of our personal data? Now is the time to take a stance. Protect your personal data from big tech with the virtual private network that I trust for my online protection, ExpressVPN. Every device, whether you're on your phone, laptop, or TV, has a unique string of numbers called an IP address. When you search for stuff, watch videos, or even click a link, big tech companies can use that IP to track all your activity and tie it back to you. When I use ExpressVPN, my connection gets rerouted through their secure encrypted servers, so these companies cannot see my IP address at all. My internet activity becomes anonymized, and my network data is encrypted. And the best part is you don't need to be tech savvy to use ExpressVPN. Just download the app on your phone or computer, tap one button, and you're protected. Protect your internet activity with the VPN I use every day. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get 3 extra months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh. expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get 3 extra months free. expressvpn.com/Dinesh. What's happening on the impeachment front? The Senate had a vote on whether to dismiss the impeachment trial altogether, not have it at all. And very interestingly, the vast majority of Republicans voted to dismiss. Only 5 Republicans, and here they are. Well, they're the usual suspects. Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, Pat Toomey, Ben Sasse. They are the only ones that voted for the trial to even go forward. And I think politically what this means is that impeachment is dead in the sense that there is no way the Republicans are going to vote to convict. They have sort of come to their senses. And let's think about McConnell, who had made the statement, oh, I'm kind of waiting to hear the evidence on both sides. I haven't really made up my mind. Well, McConnell voted to throw the whole thing out. So we kind of know his position on the issue. And so this is a little bit of a dead horse, but the Democrats on the left are determined to keep beating it. Joe Biden was asked about impeachment, and he said this. He goes, I think it has to happen. And he said, yeah, it could have an effect on his agenda, but there would be, quote, a worse effect if it didn't happen. So here's Biden, and we're starting to see his character emerge. He's a Sphinx-like figure who says these cryptic things. It's almost like going to the oracle at Delphi in ancient Greece, and you then have to sort of interpret what he's saying. And you're really not sure if this is the result of subtlety or senility or some combination of the two. Now, Chief Justice Roberts has decided to skip impeachment. If this was a real impeachment, he'd have to be there. So the Constitution is kind of clear on this, that when you are having a Senate trial following a House impeachment of a sitting president, the Chief Justice will preside. The reason that Roberts doesn't have to preside is that Trump is not a sitting president. He is actually a private citizen. And yet, for various political reasons, the left is going after him. Now, the stupidity of the whole thing can really be seen if you look at Trump's so-called incitement. And you realize it is a pathetic comparison to what the left has been inciting constantly over the past many months. Here's just a small snippet of Kamala Harris's incitement, which dwarfs anything we've heard from Trump.
That's right. But they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And that's this is a movement, I'm telling you. They're not going to stop. And everyone beware. Because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
Want to belong to a senior organization you can trust? I want you to know about AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC is the fastest growing conservative 50-plus organization in America. Over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by folks who feel the same way we do. We are not alone. AMAC believes in and stands up for the values that have made America great: faith, family, and freedom. They believe in the sanctity of our Constitution, including the First and Second Amendments. They're fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of the federal government. They are pro-small business, secure borders, support our military, and respect our veterans. AMAC works hard to deliver real value to their members, providing the best benefits, discounts, and services you can find in one place. I want you to join AMAC today. Debbie and I are lifetime members. Go to amac.us and join now. Join AMAC today. The website again is amac.us, AMAC.us. I have an idea for how Trump and Trump's team can flip this whole Senate impeachment trial and make it a millstone, a liability for the Democrats. Now, how to do this? Trump's obvious defense is a straightforward one. Part one, I said nothing that can be reasonably interpreted as incitement. Yes, I said we should take up the cause. Yes, I said in boilerplate rhetoric that we should fight. I did not tell people to go storm the Capitol. Therefore, no incitement. Now, I hear that the House Democrats, the managers, are planning to try to make the case not by what Trump said, but by how people reacted to what he said. And there, it seems to me, that's a fool's errand for the simple reason that people can react however they want. I can tell people that they need to be vigilant with their money and they may go out and rob a bank. That doesn't mean I told them to rob the bank. And because they reacted to what I said that way, doesn't mean I made them do it or I incited them to do it. Trump's second defense, I think even more powerful, is right here. This is an article in the Washington Post from a couple of days ago. Self-styled militia members planned on storming the U.S. Capitol days in advance of Jan 6 attack, court documents say. So what this article shows is that a whole bunch of people from states like Virginia and Ohio were communicating with each other in real time. They planned to storm the Capitol. They made hotel reservations for each other. And then they had communication systems. I don't know if they had walkie-talkies, but something like that. So they were able to talk about where people were located, what doors were open. You go here, I go there. It was a ring of malcreants who came to cause trouble. They planned to cause trouble, and they caused trouble. Now, if this is the case, and this is actually coming straight from FBI documents, so it obviously is what the government itself is alleging or what the prosecutors are alleging. If it was planned, how could Trump have incited it? It's really simple. If a group of people plan to rob the bank and then they, quote, react to what I said about saving your money and trying to get more and building your wealth and they go rob the bank, well, it's not because I incited it. They came intending to do it. And they carried out their original plan. So I think this shoots the whole thing down pretty much completely. But here's the opportunity and here's my idea. What the Trump team needs to do, take advantage of the case to put voter fraud on trial. For many people, there were all these allegations of voter fraud. They've never had a forum. They've never had a courtroom. The Supreme Court didn't provide a courtroom. So we finally have a courtroom. It's called the Senate Chambers. Put the case on trial. A second idea is to put the Democrats on trial. In other words, to show every incitement that's come from the other side, including the Kamala Harris incitement I played a moment ago. Every Facebook post, every claim of violence, every victim, every looted store, every burned venue, bring all of that and put it out there and show that nothing that Trump has done comes even close to competing with the kind of overt violence that the Democrats not only invited, but when it happened, defended and celebrated. If Trump does that, he would turn what is intended to be a humiliation into a victory. Mike Lindell, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you. I don't know if all our listeners and viewers are familiar with your amazing story, which you lay out in your book. Can you say a word about your story and what someone can expect to find in the book?
Well, the name of the book's What Are the Odds from Crack Addict to CEO? It took me 7 years to write. I self-published, so all the money would go to my Lindell Recovery Network. But that aside, it's not just a book about addiction. It's a book about not giving up, perseverance. It's a redemption, what God can do with all things are possible. And one of the things I want to tell everyone, when you talk about addiction, everybody's affected by addiction, no matter how many forks you eat with. So I was a very functioning addict, raised a family for 20 years, always an entrepreneur, different businesses. And when you read this book, it's going to be like living inside of a movie. And you're going to go, wow, this is the most amazing fiction book ever, this novel. And then you're going to go, wow, this is all true. And, you know, my story is the American dream on steroids. Where else can a guy come from where I've come from to where I'm at now? And it can only happen in our great country and with God, all things are possible. And I think it's a story of hope that everybody can use right now. And everyone that has read it has told me they can't put it down. It'll take, you know, they'll read it right away from start to finish. So be careful. Even a MyPillow won't keep you from staying awake at night reading this book.
That is hilarious. Now, Mike, you were a media hero for the story, the Horatio Alger story that your life represents. But the left started going after you once you became a very outspoken supporter of Trump. You've now been perhaps the most visible target of what we call cancel culture. And my question is, a lot of people are terrified that when the left comes after you, the media comes after you, how are you going to hold up? I mean, for me, it's kind of a mark of character. So can you speak about, has this been traumatic for you to be targeted, have these companies that you've done business with for a long time call you and go, hey, Mike, we're not going to carry your products. How do you get through that?
Right. And there's two new ones this morning, Mattress Firm and ShopHQ in Minnesota. I want to put them right out there. But you know what? I want to tell everyone, because a lot of people have asked me that. Yeah, we have been through it at MyPillow four times. But the first time was when I met Donald Trump in the summer of 2016. I didn't know anything about politics. Had a private meeting with him. We talked about, he said he's going to bring jobs back like MyPillow and brought manufacturing back, and we talked about my addiction that I used to have, and he was going to stop the drugs pouring in, all these amazing things. Well, I went back to Minnesota. That was on August 16, 2015, or 2016, right after I had met him the day before, and I did a press release to the media. Now, I was the media's darling. I could say I'm walking across the street. They go, hey, how fast? How many more employees are you hiring? And I got back and did this press release, and it was crickets, and then it came, this flood of attacks by people calling me a racist and all these things on social media and emails, and I was devastated. I thought, what did I do? Why are they hating me? They don't even know what I talked about to Donald Trump. Well, these weren't, when I found out then, they weren't real people. They're bots and trolls, and they're hired by hit groups to attack and cancel out culture. Then there are some people that pile on that because they think they're real people. Well, we got through that, and then I learned back then, and then there were other entities that jumped on that too. Once it started with the bots and trolls, the Better Business Bureau took me from an A-plus to an F because they say I ran my ads too much. It was totally political. It's still an F to this day. Then again, last spring when I spoke out for God, we should all, from the Rose Garden, we should all read our Bibles and get in the Word, spend time with our families. You would have think I shot somebody. Every bot and troll attacked me for my Christianity and for reaching out to the people, telling them these good things. Well, then it happened again this summer when myoleander.com, I went on TV with that, with the guy that brought me this thing that would help the China virus. And I was attacked by bots and trolls there. Not just me, but that time they went out to companies that I worked with, like your QVC dropped me, Zulily dropped me, all these, the Canadian Shopping Channel. This happened this summer because they were attacked and they live in fear. Now, this time it's at the magnitude you can't imagine, but we've been through it before. So when I talk to these CEOs of these box stores the last week and a half now, it's up to like a dozen, from your Bed Bath Beyond, your Kohl's, Mattress Firm, HEB, the list goes on and on. And now Mattress Firm, the Shopping Channels. Well, when I talked to them, I said, you guys, these aren't your customers. These are attack groups that are hired. They're hit jobs to cancel culture. And they made a huge mistake because all of them decided to go that way. A few of them didn't. A few of them, I talked to the CEO. I said, go down and see how many friends they have. They don't have any friends. They're paid hit jobs to cancel out our, to just destroy a company. So anyway, the ones now that are all out there, it flipped on them this time. Everyone is, upset with them, what they did to MyPillow, and up and down the West Seaboard in the parking lots of these stores that canceled me out, they're going there and having cartloads of product and leaving them at checkout saying, you don't have MyPillow. And they're pushing back, cutting up their credit cards. I mean, I'm going, wow, I got support all over the country. That this time we can't let it happen anymore. Now, Twitter allows this. Twitter and Facebook, they allow these bots and trolls, but yet themselves too try and cancel out people. I'm going to tell you real quick, Dinesh, about my Twitter. Everybody knows my Twitter was canceled. But let me tell you what they did to me. When I put out this machine fraud, this evidence of the machine fraud, I put out one page of it that was 17 or 20 days ago that was discovered. I seen these guys came to me. So I put it out there. Immediately, I was suspended on Twitter. But was I suspended? I could see my Twitter. I thought I was suspended. My friends are all going, Mike, why haven't you posted anything on Twitter? I go, no, I'm suspended. They go, no, you're not. We're watching stuff come through. And why did you retweet that, Mike? Why did you retweet that? I go, they were running my Twitter. They were running it.
Really?
Sending out a narrative to the people that I was okay with the election, this fraudulent election that went on. And here I have all the evidence and stuff. And here they're running my Twitter. So now, just a couple of days ago, they gave it back to me. And so I was able to do one post. This was 10 o'clock at night. And I posted from an employee, wrote this really good letter to the editor about who I really am. Who is Mike Lindell? Because they had come out with other hit job articles about me that were just attacks. She wrote this letter. So I thought I'd put it on Twitter. It was just heartfelt. Mike Lindell drives a Chevy or a Dodge pickup and drinks coffee, just a normal guy. I put this up there 5 minutes later. That's the only post I made. Twitter took me down permanently. Boom. You're done forever. You can't do it.
Wow.
And then at the same time, and 3 weeks ago, Facebook, they didn't take me down. You know what they do? I can't go live on my own Facebook because they have to screen everything I say.
Well, let me just draw the conclusion of all this, and that is that you are a heroic guy. An ordinary guy would have succumbed to this. They would have said, okay, guys, I'll say what you want me to say. I'll do what you want me to do. You haven't done this. And so I want to urge people to get my book, in part because you're going to read the story of a guy who doesn't buckle, who's able to take incredible amounts of pressure, even though they're going after this amazingly successful thing that you've done. And you have 110 products, a wide portfolio of stuff, and you're offering up to 66% off. And what people need to do is just go to mypillow.com, check out Mike's book, use promo code Dinesh to get the full discount. And don't just look for the pillows, look for the book and look for the wide range of products that Mike has available. Mike, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dinesh. And I want to, I have 2,500 employees now, and I want to thank each and every one of you out there that are supporting us, because our business is actually going up without those stores that are boycotting us. I want to thank each and every one of you out there. God bless.
And that's how we cancel culture. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez is the voice and the face of American socialism. But I would have to say that she's not quite in the intellectual league of, say, a Karl Marx or even an Irving Howe, the many socialist thinkers in America. Here's AOC being AOC.
Check out Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
It's funny you ask this, because I was just reading today about how Milton Keynes, a famous economist back...
There's economist Milton Friedman, there's economist John Maynard Keynes, but there's no Milton Keynes. She can't even get the guy's name right.
Oh my gosh, this is a member of Congress. This is someone actually advancing legislation on the Green New Deal, the minimum wage, and other issues. And by the way, this is an economics major from Boston University. How does one even react to this? Well, I'm sort of thinking I'd like to stage, if I may, a meeting between two very separate economists, Milton Friedman and John Maynard Keynes, inside AOC's head. So this is kind of how I envision it going, and I'm going to sort of make it up as I go along, but bear with me. We'll start with Milton Friedman.
Hello, John. Fancy seeing you here. Where are we?
Jolly good to see you, Milton. We are actually inside AOC's head.
Wow, it's really messy in here.
We are, as I said, in AOC's head.
It's really vacant. Lots of empty space.
To repeat, we are in AOC's head.
Yes, well, you know, she insists we are one person, Milton Keynes.
What an extraordinary idea, and bloody surprising coming from an economics major, Boston University, I believe.
I was never too sure about that place. Are you sure she wasn't a home economics major?
What's crazy about this whole Milton Keynes business is that we don't agree on anything.
Nothing at all.
I believe in balanced budgets.
I like deficits.
I'm for small government, the night watchman state.
I'm for big government, the welfare state.
I wonder what AOC was thinking.
Thinking, that's just it. She wasn't. She doesn't do much of it.
Thinking is, as we say in America, not her thing.
And on that, my dear Milton, we do agree.
I'm actually laughing my head off to have my daughter, Danielle D'Souza Gill, on the podcast. Dee, it's kind of funny that we, you know, chat every day, but then here we are on the podcast and I'm supposed to be, quote, interviewing you. But I think it's actually fun for people to sort of listen in to some of these conversations because they, well, they're about us, but they also tie into larger issues in our society. So welcome to the podcast. And I wanna ask you, well, you just sent me an article. It's from the New York Times. And it's called The Rich Kids Who Want to Tear Down Capitalism. Fascinating subject in itself because these are kids who are the beneficiaries of capitalism. They apparently want to rip it down, move us in the direction of socialism. And one of these rich kids, in fact, the guy kicking off the story, is well known to you and the family is known to me. So say a little bit about this article and what it's about.
Yeah, the article is about rich kids who want to tear down capitalism. So the article starts off by talking about this guy named Sam Jacobs, who I went to high school with, and he is from the Jacobs family that's known for Qualcomm. I think his grandfather started Qualcomm, so they're kind of the most, or one of the most wealthy and affluent families, I guess, in San Diego. And so everyone kind of knew who they were, and they were known as kind of being, I think, billionaires. I think he himself, Sam, is worth $100 million, the article says. So it talks about him kind of talking to his lawyers about how to get hold of his trust fund, and he wants $25 million and how he wants to give it away and how he wants to donate it to socialist causes, or at least other people also in this article, not just him, but these other kind of rich heirs want to take down capitalism and donate to kind of socialist causes. And I just thought it was interesting because his name stuck out to me.
Well, I think what is really remarkable is that you've got a kid who is now saying, I want to create a society in which someone like Sam Jacobs, myself, would not be possible. In other words, I would have to say, this is my take on it, the spoiled heir of a family fortune, an intellectual slug who has done nothing himself to make that fortune. And he wants to have a society where a kind of sit-on-the-couch loser like himself does not exist. But see, I agree with him. I'd like to have a society where you have, now his grandfather was Irwin Jacobs, who was an MIT professor who created this new technology. His father has been running the company. So those are actually valuable entrepreneurs. They've created jobs. They've helped people pay mortgages and support families. But here's this slug, Sam, and he, the money's all raining on him for, and he's done nothing to deserve it. I mean, I can kind of see his point when he goes, I'm an undeserving loser. I shouldn't have all this money. Wouldn't you agree that he's right?
Of course. And I think that that's great. I hope that he does donate all of it, hopefully to, you know, reputable charities, hopefully to things like hospitals and schools and not to leftist organizations. But I think that this idea that socialists and just people on the left in general want to force everyone else to pay more, they want to force everyone else to have higher taxes and force everyone else to, I guess, live the way that they choose to, is completely different. For him to force other people who aren't himself or don't have the same situation as him to have to keep less of their money, I think is unfair. But I think he thinks that if they don't force everyone to, then everyone won't do it. And so they have to force everyone.
He has to
force them to be charitable. In other words, it's not just about him giving away his money. He wants to give it away politically to create a society that compels other people, maybe people who are not as privileged as he is, who don't have the kind of money to burn, you might say, that he does. And he wants to impose sacrifices on them and come out looking like a great guy. When we come back, I want to talk about this surprising phenomenon. Rich people used to be automatically leaning Republican. And now that's no longer so. Many of them incline left. And I'm wondering why that is so. We'll discuss that when we come back. Got problems with the IRS? I got to tell you about a time not so long ago when the big bad U.S. government tried to make an example out of me. And I know firsthand the importance of having proper representation to protect your freedom as well as your finances from being taken by the IRS. Ryan Danica and the Christian folks at South Coast Tax will discuss your unique situation and create a tailored framework of how to attack the situation head on with the IRS and allow you a true fresh start. South Coast Tax has a settlement average of 3 cents on the dollar, or 97% reduction rate, along with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. With 20 years of experience, Ryan told me that he has yet to see a tax situation that has stumped him, and that's pretty impressive considering the size of the tax laws. Call Ryan at 800-TAX-3156 or check out their website, southcoasttaxresolution.com. And you will see for yourself that it will be the best move you ever made and the first step in getting your financial freedom back. That's 800-TAX-3156. Daniel, we were talking a minute ago about Sam Jacobs, a rich kid with a $100 million bank balance who wants to use the cash to promote socialism. And I think we would agree that Jacobs is a beneficiary of enormous privilege. I don't know if you'd call it white privilege. But I think what's interesting is that you sometimes get attacked by leftists these days who say you're privileged. I mean, how do you think about this issue of privilege in connection with, let's say, Sam and you?
Yeah, I guess it's funny. We went to the same school in San Diego called the Bishop School. So I was definitely really fortunate to have an education like that. But I think it's funny because growing up, someone like him would never say to me, "Oh, Danielle, you're so privileged." It's really only now that I'm more of an outspoken conservative that they would then say, "Hey, you know, you should be socialist too. And, you know, you have to join kind of the radical group and stuff." And I guess if I think back, it's funny because, you know, middle school, I had a birthday party, but Sam Jacobs, he had the Goo Goo Dolls perform at his birthday party. So, of course, I would say that I'm incredibly blessed. I like to use the word blessed as opposed to privilege, because privilege is very much of a leftist term. But I'm very blessed because I grew up around a lot of books, and I grew up having a lot of, I would say, access to knowledge and learning, and was exposed to conservative ideas. So, of course, I would acknowledge that. But I think that today, just so many of these young leftists who are woke, who are privileged, who, you know, whether they're someone like Sam Jacobs or whether they're, you know, an Antifa person living on their parents' couch kind of thing, no matter what, they want to throw the privilege card at people who are conservative. Whether you're at their level or not, you know, they want to act like conservatives are the capitalist, you know, crony capitalist people. And the reality is that they're really not anymore. Maybe long ago, but today our party really fights for the middle class, and the party of the left doesn't do anything for them. They want to raise their taxes.
Why do rich people today who have a lot of wealth and presumably benefit from, let's say, paying lower taxes, why would they vote for a party that wants to punish them on the economic front? Are they actually self-sacrificing, or is there something in it for them? What's in it for them?
I think when you're at maybe that level of someone like Sam Jacobs, just as an example, 100 million or so, you know, if you're being taxed a little bit extra, they probably don't tell the difference. So he probably is willing to be taxed more, but he wants to get all of the social clout that comes with being a leftist and wants to kind of, you know, have this article written about him in the New York Times as someone who wants to give it all away and gets this kind of coverage. And he would probably never be acknowledged by the New York Times if it weren't for that. But I think that they just want all of the accolades that come from the culture of saying, oh, yes, I am really rich, but I get a pass for being really rich because I'm a radical. Whereas, of course, if you're a conservative, you don't get any of the kind of social clout and so on.
Irvin Kristol used to say at the American Enterprise Institute that Jews were the only people who earn like Episcopalians but vote like Puerto Ricans. But I think what's remarkable is, although that was true at one time, Jews were the only ethnic group, it now applies to so many people across the board of our society. I think what you're saying is that the left owns the organs of culture. They have the cultural trophies to hand out. And that causes a lot of affluent people to say, look, it's not about the money. It's once you have enough money, it's about these cultural accolades. And that's why people who previously might have been conservative now become leftists. Is that how you would put it?
Exactly. And this article even touched on the fact that there are some of these kind of young radicals who don't just want to donate whatever they're being given, but they then peer pressure their parents into doing the same. So they will say, you know, hey, parent, you have to donate to this radical group and you have to support this and support that, or else you're a bad person and I hate you. And I think just this this sense that they're being told by these leftist groups, you're in the driver's seat, you decide whether you're, you know, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist and all this, and you've benefited from all that, but you can undo it right now if you just donate to Black Lives Matter and stuff. And it's just that's a silver bullet.
So one simple lesson I draw from that is that we know we're living in an upside down society when the children are telling their parents what they ought to be doing. Hey, Dee, thanks for coming on the podcast. As always, I look forward to having you back soon. We're now at the mercy of one-party control and an agenda driven by tax and spend economics. I don't need to get into all the social ramifications, but fiscally, you can expect compounded growth of our national debt and the systematic devaluation of the U.S. dollar. So there's only one question. What is your plan? What are you doing right now to protect your savings and your retirement? I'm excited to have Birch Gold Group as an advertiser because Birch Gold Group will help you diversify a portion of your savings, an IRA or eligible 401k, into an IRA backed by gold and silver. They are the premier precious metals IRA company in America with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating, countless 5-star reviews, and thousands of satisfied customers. There's a tidal wave of inflation coming. Gold is your hedge. Debbie and I are investing through Birch Gold, and you should too. Text Dinesh to 484848 for your free information kit on Precious Metals IRA, or to speak with a Birch Gold representative today. Time is running out, but you can protect your savings now. Text Dinesh to 484848. President Biden, in a recent executive order and statement, has dissolved the 1776 Commission with its claim to promote patriotic history. And by doing so, Biden has sort of aligned himself with, well, I won't call it unpatriotic history, but with the 1619 Project, the whole idea that America was corrupted, you might say, from the start, from 1619. And this project associated with the journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones, she's not a historian, but a journalist, has drawn a lot of fire from prominent scholars, prominent historians, who have said that she basically gets the core premise wrong. What is the core premise? The core premise is, I'm not quoting, anti-Black racism runs in the very DNA of this country. Now, some of these prominent historians, we're talking about people like James McPherson, Princeton, Gordon Wood of, I believe, Brown, Victoria Burnham, James Oakes. These are leading scholars in their field. And they've disputed, first of all, the kind of defeatist assumption here. I'm quoting Oakes now. He goes, the worst thing you can say about this is that it leads to political paralysis. There's nothing we can do to get out of it. If it's the DNA, there's nothing you can do, because what can you do? Alter your DNA? So the point here is that if America is chronically, intrinsically, you may almost say biologically this way, it is a recipe for hopelessness. But I think the more factual point is that Nicole Hannah-Jones makes the claim that the American Revolution was motivated by the founders' desire to protect slavery. And here these scholars are weighing in unanimously and saying this is complete and total nonsense. First of all, it requires you to believe that all the anti-slavery statements of the founders were just brazen and outright lies. By the way, this is what the Southern secessionists said later. People like Calhoun, they said, oh, Jefferson couldn't have believed it. He was just saying stuff like that. And interestingly, the left today embraces that view of the founders. But the more profound point is that slavery came to America through the British. Let's remember, it's a long distance from 1619 to 1776, 150 years. Jefferson actually accused the British of preventing anti-slavery movements from developing in America. And the historian Sean Valences point out that, quote, there was more anti-slavery activity in the colonies than in Britain. In other words, the idea that somehow the Americans wanted to have a revolution to save slavery from the British, no. The British had slavery. The British anti-slavery movement wouldn't develop until into the 19th century. Now, I find it really interesting that some historians did not sign on to the critique of the 1619 Project, but interesting what their motive is for not doing it. Here's Nell Painter, professor at Princeton. She was asked to sign this letter that the 1619 Project is based on a kind of a lie. And she says this, I felt if I signed on to that, I would be signing on to the white guy's attack of something that has given a lot of black journalists and writers a chance to speak up in a really big way. So I support the 1619 Project as a kind of cultural event. Now, we have to translate here. Here's what she's saying. From the point of view of scholarship, the 1619 Project is a disgrace. But because it's a black woman, Nicole Hannah-Jones, pushing this idea, a black journalist, we can't say this. We've got to practice, you may almost call it intellectual affirmative action. We can't apply normal historical standards to the 1619 Project because it's going to make black journalist types feel bad. I cannot tell you how condescending this really is to those of us who are persons of color, who want to be judged by the same standards, who aren't trying to pass ourselves off as intellectuals who are searching for mere self-esteem. But that is one way in which the left looks at this kind of thing. They know it's bogus, but they support it as, quote, a cultural event. More on the 1619 Project when I come back. You never thought COVID could cost you your home, right? It just might because cybercrime is up 75%. And by far the most serious cybercrime to worry about is home title theft. The job of the criminals is easier than you think. The title documents to our homes are now online. The thief finds your home's title, forges your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home to him. Then he takes out loans on your home and leaves you in debt. You won't know until late payment or eviction notices arrive, insurance doesn't cover you, and neither do common identity theft programs. That's why I protect my home with Home Title Lock. The instant Home Title Lock detects someone tampering with my home's title, they will shut it down. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code RADIO to receive 30 days of protection. That's code RADIO at HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. As some of you know, I'm in a fierce battle with these leftist historians, and some of you may wonder, Dinesh, some of this gets a little bit nasty. Why do you do it? I don't do it because I'm combative by nature. In fact, if you knew me, and Debbie can testify, I'm actually a very non-confrontational person. But I do it because the left is pushing these lies to our kids. They're pushing it in schools. They're pushing it in universities. And no one takes them on. Even on the conservative intellectual side, you can't name a single person who is engaging these guys and calling them out on it. And so I do it because someone has to do it. And if I seem combative, it's because our side needs to get into this combat. The other side is fighting, even if we don't. Now, I want to address one of the key questions raised by these leftist historians and by the 1619 Project, because I think the conventional answer that's given to it is inadequate. Not wrong, but insufficient. And that's why did the American founders not outlaw slavery? If they were anti-slavery, if they said things like all men are created equal, or Jefferson's various statements where he basically says that justice is in one side and self-preservation is the other, the Almighty can't side with us in such a contest. Jefferson really in biblical terms condemning slavery. Well, why didn't they get rid of it in Philadelphia? Now, the conventional answer to this is that the founders didn't do it because if they did it, they couldn't have gotten a union. In other words, the states that slavery was legal, by the way, in every state, the states wouldn't have joined the union. And so they made a practical decision. You may almost say they had to set aside the principle in the name of prudence or in the name of practice. But I think that answer is actually inadequate. And if you want to see and understand the founders' true dilemma, you have to go to the Declaration of Independence, but read the sentence to the end. Because the Declaration contains not one, but two principles. The first one, all men are created equal. You can call it the equality principle. But if you keep reading, you discover that there is a second principle that emerges that is often ignored, consent of the governed. Governments acquire their legitimacy through the consent of the governed. And here's the point. You want the founders to abolish slavery. But what if they don't have the consent of the governed? What if it is the case that the American people do not agree to this proposition? You want the founders to run roughshod over popular consent? Then they abolish slavery but kill democracy. So the founders knew that this was not a choice between principle and practice, but between two rival principles, the equality principle, which needs to be sustained, and the consent principle. And the way that they sustained them is they compromised and permitted slavery for a time while building a union on anti-slavery principles so that when consent permitted, slavery would in fact be overthrown, but overthrown democratically. Lincoln put it beautifully when he said they meant to declare the right so that the enforcement of it might follow when the circumstances permitted. Frederick Douglass said pretty much the same thing. He talked about slavery as a kind of scaffolding for the building, for the American house. And his idea was that, and it's a beautiful image, the scaffolding would be taken down as the house was completed. And that's exactly what happened. So the great movements of American history, far from being departures from the founding, are a return to the principles of the founding, but a fulfillment of those principles within the parameters of democratic politics, which is to say, with the consent of the governed.